Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
What a thrill to talk to Lloyd Pierce, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. Like all of us, we're cooped up during this COVID-19 pandemic. How's it going, LP?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Doing some following of you on social media and reading some other interviews. And it doesn't look like you're going stir crazy because of what's going on in the world.
No, I think, you know, I'm in a position where I'm pretty comfortable. I got my wife and my daughter, and we've got enough room and space and things to occupy her, which, you know, she sets our schedule every day. And we're fortunate enough to keep her occupied. We're both here, which makes it great, especially at this time. She's only 20 months, so it allows us, allows me an opportunity to really see all of her growth, all of her development. You know, normally at this time of year, I'm on the road or we got games or practices and I'm missing out a lot of crucial moments. So just finding a blessing in all of this right now.
I was just thinking about that. Over the last month, you'd be normally preparing for games. Instead, a chance to reconnect with your family. That's got to be a great opportunity.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that's the best way of looking at it for me is to just keep it in perspective. You know, I think there's a lot of things when we come out of all of this that, you know, you hope you can find some growth, find some opportunities to really, you know, dig deep, think of how you want to appreciate what was taken away. And a lot of things were taken away from all of us. And there's a potential that it could come back. We can go through the same situation at another time, but I think we'll be better equipped. We'll be better prepared on how to, you know, manage our household, how to manage our days from a productivity standpoint. And I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to be as productive as I can, and I'm trying to be as intentional as I can with regards to my growth, our team's growth, our city's growth, and my family's growth.
There's nothing that any of us have in our backgrounds that can prepare you to handle something like this. You can learn an offense, you can learn a defensive scheme, but for a pandemic, who do you tap into from a role model standpoint or a peer that can help you keep a team together when you're not together?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the biggest thing you can do is, you know, think about what's important to you. I think a lot of times people are usually saying there's not enough time to do A, B, or C, whether it's workout, you know, development tools, things you want to grow and learn or research, or just productive with your family, spending time with your family or you know, increase productivity at work. This is the time. You know, I know a lot of people are still working and working from home. I am doing the same deal, but it's really an opportunity for me to try and get better as a person, as a coach, as a human being, as a family member. And, you know, I say it all the time, I'm not afraid to learn. And so I'm using every opportunity I can to learn something new. You know, everybody's on Zoom. Everybody is on FaceTime chats. I'm doing a lot of audio books. I'm trying to hear from and read everything that I possibly can. So it's a great opportunity to just grow.
What's your favorite new audio book?
I'm currently reading Ernie Johnson's Unscripted. I just finished Jonah Berger's Catalyst. But the and that was great. The Ernie Johnson book has been phenomenal so far.
Do you do that late at night, you know, to carve time? I know when Maya Joy is all over the place, it must be tough to, you know, sit and read or listen to something.
No, you know, the best time, I still go grab a Starbucks every day, and the lines are really long. So that ends up being about 30 minutes, which, you know, if you do it at appropriate speed, and I listen to it at about 1.6, 1.7 speed. You know, I can get through two chapters. So anytime I do get in the car, and I like to just still get in the car and just drive, I don't get out or go anywhere, but I'll still just take a ride, you know, just to be in the car and to break away the norm a little bit. And I'll use that time to use the audio books. I did it when I was mopping the floor last night in our kitchen and living room. So there's opportune times that I can do it, but obviously it's when Maya Joy is resting.
What about the challenge of being in shape? When you're sequestered, you can do the squats and push-ups and burpees, but being fit is totally different than being basketball fit.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't play as much. You know, I still stay in shape and I'm active. I'm not on the court as much. I know the challenge is tremendous for our guys and our players and all players of any sport, really, at this time. When you're confined to the house or you're confined to some limited resources of where you can work out, you do have to tap into that creativity and find, you know, opportune times and opportune workouts that, you know, you can do right now. I have a Peloton. I use the Peloton pretty much daily just to keep my heart rate up and you know, lung capacity. But it's just it's a great challenge, and it's a mental and physical challenge. I have a nice little set of bands and you know, a little bit of some kettlebell and some dumbbells, nothing crazy, but I have enough to just keep me active, keep me fit, keep my heart rate up. But I think as an athlete, you know, I think the challenge is really, you know, what type of resources do you have during this time, and how can you maximize what you have? You know, obviously you can always grab a basketball, find a little room and get some ball handling in. And what that does is it strengthens your arm. It keeps your hand-eye coordination going. You know, there's a lot of ways you can make up for what you're lacking. You just got to be creative. You got to be a little bit challenging. You got to get out of your comfort zone.
How long do you think it would take a group to get together and be ready to play a game, you know, once this pandemic ends and you can start practicing and getting your squad together again?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest challenge. It's every individual, you know, has a unique circumstance right now in terms of what they have available to them, whether you have a driveway where you can shoot or you have access to a gym that's private. Some of the guys on our team do, some of the guys don't. Some guys are in apartments, which means, you know, they have no access to gyms or courts or even to basketball. You know, imagine being on a seventh floor and you got someone up there working on their ball handling for 30 minutes right above you. So I think they, you know, there's some challenges that go into the apartment living versus the, you know, the home living versus the, you know, really big house with space and room and, you know, having a court there. So each individual guy is going to have a different challenge. You know, I think it's going to take at least 2 weeks just to assess the body and get on the court and feel the impact. You know, such a different deal for me to hop on a bike every day and then all of a sudden jump on a court and feel the impact it has on my knees and my ankles and my joints and my lower back if you haven't done it in 3 months. And we have to take that those type of things into consideration with our players. As great athletes as they are, missing that amount of time, jumping, running, pounding, the physical impact that it requires, it's going to take some time to build that back up, condition that, and properly assess it as well.
Is there a communication with the strength and conditioning folks to maybe outline a program for the guys they do on their own, or are they truly on their own with this?
No, our strength and conditioning team are great. They do a great job. We're doing virtual workouts where they're calling our players and doing FaceTime and walking them through the workouts. You know, again, it's all individual based because each individual has their own specific needs or, you know, focal points that they have to work on.
In today's climate, connecting on Zoom and FaceTime clearly is the way to go. Hey, Lloyd, I saw some great video of one of your team meetings, two comedians joining your coaching staff, at least for fun. One of those, Chris Tucker.
Man, I'm so glad y'all hired me.
Yeah, you know, we got a new coach that's joining the staff. So
there it is. Give me some light.
Hey,
man, what's up, fellas?
What's up, baby?
Listen, hey, man, I'm so glad to be part of the team, and you know, I got a lot of new plays.
That is cool.
Well, you know, anytime you're talking about Chris Tucker, you're gonna have a good time, and. You know, I think during this time, and part of the reason why, you know, Chris was involved was there's so much negativity that's going on. There's so much focus that's on, you know, what's not right now. And I think even when we get out of this and we start moving forward, you know, assessing what's really important, you know, the word essential has been used throughout this. Anytime you leave your house, make sure it's for essentials. People that are still working are essential workers. I think when we come out of this and we're on the other side, I think the word essential still needs to remain in our vocabulary. And for Chris joining us, Chris Tucker joining us, you know, it was essential that we have a good time and we learn to appreciate what we're blessed with and the ability to play basketball. And now it's been taken away from us. When it does return back to us, we still have to maintain that mentality that we need to enjoy it because we don't know when it'll be taken away from us again.
And watching the video of Anthony Adams, he looks like he's got a great jab step, and he calls himself 300 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal. There's always room for a guy like that.
No, he is he's a character. You know, I personally have never met him. I was appreciative of him wanting to join and have some fun with our guys and our staff. But everything I've heard about him, everything I've seen, everything I've followed with him online, he's done a great job of just creating his online personality and showing the world who he is. And I don't know if there are many people that just have that much fun in life. And he truly has that much fun in life. Yeah. And we were thankful to have him on and share some of that with our guys.
How often do you have the Zoom meetings to stay connected with that group?
We connect as a team every Sunday. We do it every Sunday at 5 p.m. We connect as a team in small groups every Thursday at 5 p.m. And, you know, there's really no script. It's not like we're doing a program every week and it's a follow-up. It's really, you know, each week we're learning something new, but it's an opportunity for us to stay connected. They say social distancing. I think it's more physical distancing. We need to stay physically distant from each other for a while. But it's also important for us to socially connect, and Zoom allows us to socially connect with one another.
You've got a great young core with Trey Young and Collins and Reddish, Hunter, Herter, guys like that. And certainly that's the foundation of the franchise moving forward. But I've loved Vince Carter ever since, heck, I can remember him playing North Carolina. And you pretty much came out of college at the same time. He won that dunk contest when you were maybe 2 years out of Santa Clara. What's it been like for you to coach a guy like that that's been around forever? And what kind of impact has he made on the younger players?
You know, I think the biggest thing just right away is it's like, wow. You know, for me, I always take these wow moments of can't believe someone made me a head coach in the NBA. You know my history and being at Santa Clara and just kind of growing up in the Bay Area. And, you know, what a privilege I had to play for Coach Davey and to play at Santa Clara and to play with Marlon and Steve Nash and to still remain, you know, very close with all of my college, literally all of my college teammates. You know, and I don't take that kind of stuff for granted. I love hearing from those guys. I love reaching out to those guys. All of our families are connected in some way or another, you know, in terms of knowing each other. We've had the pleasure to spend time with one another. And so just navigating through our individual careers, you know, mine just happened to end up coaching and happened to accelerate pretty quickly and progressively. And you know, ultimately I'm here where I am in Atlanta as a head coach, hopefully getting a chance to complete this second year. But, you know, I don't take that for granted. And I think it's important that you always look at it that way. And so just having that moment and you add a guy like Vince Carter, you know, you don't take it for granted. You're just appreciative of the fact that, wow, you know, not only am I head coach, I'm coaching a legend. You know, after it's all said and done, I can say I coach Vince Carter and he's been tremendous. What you learn, and I really try and study greatness as often as I can, is, you know, you don't make it 22 years in anything, you know, let alone a professional sport with the rigors and demands that it takes on. You don't last for 22 years unless you're an unbelievable person. You have great luck. You have great discipline. You have a tremendous work ethic and obviously a ton of talent and skill. Vince has all of that. And to see it up close and personal has truly been an honor for me. So I, you know, at the end of the day, when this is all over and said and done with, I'll be able to say I had coach Vince Carter for 2 years and it was his last 2 years of his career.
How sweet was it to throw him in at the end of that last game to hit a three-pointer, you know, in the closing seconds? Maybe his last basket.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of bizarre. We obviously talked about it a little bit before the game just because we were starting to receive some of the information that was going on and the possibility that this, you know, could be our last game. Hell, the possibility that we were going to play that game was thrown out there. And you know, but once the game starts, you know, for me, I forget that this could be the last game or this is that, or, you know, who knows what's going on. We're just trying to win a game. And it was a very up and down game playing the Knicks. We're down 20. We get it back. And I think we take the lead go into overtime, and then they get some separation from us. And, you know, at that point, everything has already turned. You know, the league has started calling games. They suspended some games that hadn't started yet. And that news trickles down to everybody. And it definitely trickled down to our fans in Atlanta. And they just started the chant, you know, put Vince in, you know, yelling his name, Vince Carter. So there's few things I hear during the course of the game. You know, that one stood out and I was able to hear it. And the guys on the bench were able to, you know, muster Vince up. And, you know, he takes his stuff off and he runs down there. And, you know, we have a play that, you know, we easily can get a shot for. And you know, New York knew the moment as well. So they weren't really trying to defend the action. But just to get him back out there, him be able to take that shot, and no doubt, you know, the shot goes down. I think that's truly a special moment. And if that's his last shot and last opportunity, a lot of fun.
I go back to your time at Santa Clara. You were about 19 years old. Super athletic, super quiet. One of the assistants at the time, Larry Hauser, wondered if you were a mute because you wouldn't speak. And then watching you evolve as a man has been awesome over the years. At what point did you think that, hey, coaching's something I could really do?
Well, I think, you know, I get asked the questions a lot about coaching in general. And, you know, how do you move up, or what was your path, and what advice do you have? For me, coaching was it was a respect for the game. It was a love for the game. It was an opportunity to still stay involved. That's how I started. And that was really kind of the only purpose I had. There were no intentions of being a college head coach or an NBA head coach or even coaching in the NBA. When I started, Coach Davey, Santa Clara, gave me a great opportunity. And, you know, he was the one that suggested it to me. And he told me, you know, flat out, when you're done playing, and if you would like, I'll have a spot for you if you want to get into coaching. I think you'll be a natural fit. I think I'm 26 at the time when the thought first pops up. And, you know, I was able to join his staff and connect with the guys. Obviously, Santa Clara has a very special place for me. So being back home and being on campus and having a different role and being around people that, you know, appreciate and support me and love that I'm there, it just felt great. But it was easy. You know, it was an easy connect because it was safe and it was home. It was really not until Coach was let go and we had to move on, and it really just it put me in a bind of, now what? What am I going to do? I can stay at Santa Clara and kind of be in the same position for 10 more years. But I don't know if I'll ever truly grow. And there were some opportunities to just look elsewhere. And that's where the NBA opportunity presented itself. Thanks to Randy Bennett and his connections to the guys in Cleveland, Mike Brown and Chris Grant. And they gave me an opportunity to come out and coach there. And so, you know, it took on a completely different path. My intentions to starting coaching to my coaching career started just from wanting to stay connected and feeling like I could help players grow. I took that same mentality to the NBA. And I think, you know, if you have the right intentions and the right approach and you put your head down and really try and better yourself as you're bettering others, trying to help others get better, then you get rewarded. And I wasn't looking to be rewarded. I wasn't seeking head coaching opportunities. I wasn't trying to move on. Things just fell in my lap, and I tried to keep the same work ethic. And, you know, eventually people took notice of that, and that's how my path took off.
I remember watching a game, you were with Philadelphia, your last year with the Sixers, and there was a timeout late in the regular season. And I just was kind of peeking at what was going on there. And you were totally involved, engaged with the players in the timeout. And Brett even kind of took a back seat as you were, you know, integrating with those guys. And I sent a text to a mutual friend of ours. I go, oh my God, Lloyd's not just a, you know, secondary guy or a support guy. He's like running things. He's ready. And then sure enough, a little bit later, I started hearing the rumors about Atlanta. So at what point did you feel like, hey, I could really do this at the head coaching level?
Again, Dave, I mean, for me, I didn't consume my time thinking about things like that. You know, when the Atlanta opportunity presented itself, to be brutally honest, it came out of nowhere. I didn't have an agent at the time. I was working on, you know, I was vetting out a few agents, just thinking ahead and trying to prepare for my career as I always do. But, you know, I didn't think much to it. You know, as I'm speaking to one of the agents, and it ultimately ended up being my agency, that I'm working with, you know, they said, hey, you know, I know we haven't started yet, but, you know, I hear Atlanta's interested in you. And that's really kind of how we got going. But there was never a moment, you know, I heard the best advice at a coaching clinic where another coach said, you know, your best preparation as a head coach is to be the best assistant coach you can be. If you're trying to assist your head coach in every area and you're doing your best and you're really trusting and buying into what you're doing is helping your head coach lead the team, you're preparing yourself on how to be a head coach, because you're ultimately going to need that from your assistants and who you delegate and empower some of those responsibilities to. And that truly was my focus. When I heard that, I just thought that was such a great statement. You know, you can consume yourself with wanting to be something, or you can just be as good as you can in the job you currently have. And I chose to be as good as I could in the job I currently had. But at the same time, Brett truly and really did empower me and gave me the opportunity, as you saw, to lead and to be in control of the areas that, you know, he positioned me. It wasn't me taking over or me stepping on his toes. He put me in that position and he allowed me those opportunities. So I'm always grateful to Brett for that, but I'm also appreciative of the opportunity, the growth that he allowed me. That positions me for the position that I'm currently in. And you don't have to seek it. You just have to do your job. And if you're doing your job properly, people will help you. People will need you. People will rely on you.
That's a great piece of advice for any walk of life, not just coaching, but just living and working in any profession.
I try. I try and keep it as simple as I can. You know, I don't speak too much on what I haven't experienced or what I don't know. And it's the same thing, you know, it goes in coaching. Coach what you know, coach what you can teach, coach what you believe. You know, when you try and be someone else or try and emulate someone else's system or, you know, take someone's quote and try and make it yours and it's not natural, it just doesn't work the same way. And so I think the best thing you can be is try and be as authentic as you can. You know, try and coach what you know, what you're comfortable in. You'd hate to go through a game trying something and it wasn't your belief, it wasn't something you were passionate about, wasn't something that you were educated on, and relying on that's not a good way to live, and it's not a good way to coach.
Lloyd, you know I've never been afraid to back down from the tough question, the tough statement. You tell me your belief that Carol killed her husband in Tiger King.
You know, what a bizarre show. I think we'll just start there. It's a, you know, I have no experience in that kind of life. You know, a zoo with big cats, you know, in cages, out of cages. I have no experience in that kind of life. I don't, it's not me. It's a different world. You know, I think the people that are involved in that show have chosen that path and have a passion about it, but it's very bizarre. And so, you know, just seeing the documentary and seeing the story, you know, I don't know if she did it, but it wouldn't be past me if she did or knew about it or had some involvement. I think it's just truly bizarre, everything that went on in that documentary.
In all honesty, I haven't watched it yet, but I saw some quotes about you watching it and people have been bugging me. So that's next on my to-do list. Do you have any other maybe Netflix or any kind of binge watching shows that you have time to watch during this downtime?
Oh, I watch everything. You know, I just finished The Morning Show on Apple TV with Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell, which was phenomenal. I watched season 3 of Ozarks, which I am a huge fan of.
Great show.
You know, we're one more episode away from finishing the last show on Orange is the New Black. What else are we watching? A little bit of everything. This Is Us. Can't wait for the Michael Jordan documentary to come out. So no, I, you know, when Maya Joy is asleep, I get about 3-4 hours of just pure TV. The days are busy. The days are constant. A lot of Zoom meetings, a lot of team meetings, a lot of coaches meetings, a lot of texting, a lot of, you know, we've started a pledge here in the city of Atlanta for 2 nonprofit organizations during this time. And so there's a lot of work that goes into that. My wife and I and my agent. So I'm busy, you know, 7 a.m. I had a radio show at 7:40 a.m. this morning, and I'll be busy, you know, all the way up until Maya Joy goes to sleep. And then, you know, when she does, I just get on the couch and I'm like everybody else, catching up and binging on my shows.
Hey, one to put on your list, Lloyd, is What If Renee Zellweger's in it? It's a Netflix show.
I'll check it out.
And she is evil. I think you'll like it.
All right.
I'm so grateful for you visiting for a few minutes. Nice young team, $49 million in cap space. That doesn't go unnoticed. And a coach I'm super fond of. The future is bright in Atlanta. Hey, do me a favor. Say hello to Marlon for me. I've got all my Hawk swag. Kiss your wife. Kiss Maya Joy for me.
Will do. Appreciate it, Dave. And good luck to you. And hope you guys are safe out there.
You're the best, LP. Thank you.
All right, D-Lo.
That's a good dude. Atlanta Hawks head coach, Lloyd Pierce. The executive producer of The Dave Lewis Show is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and now iHeartRadio. We really appreciate your positive feedback and comments. As many stars as you can give certainly helps out a lot. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. Be safe.